Welcome to a homegrown family podcast where we grow the produce and the kids.
Hey everyone, welcome to a homegrown family podcast. I'm your host, Joe Mettler. Today we're getting into some of that animal husbandry that I've been mentioning here in other episodes, and we're going to be talking about sheep and raising sheep, my experience with sheep on my dad's farm, and some of dad's experience. So listen on. Welcome aboard, Dad.
Hello.
A little bit of background here, I guess. Dad grew up raising some sheep, but then I also helped Dad raise sheep and showed sheep in 4-H for a small period of time. We had a, pretty decent sized flock, maybe 100 ewes at one point. And stopped raising sheep back when I was like 14, I think. Something like that. The bigger flock. And after that, it was just a handful here and there that we kind of kept as raising sheep for 4-H animals.
So I still had the bigger flock after I got rid of the mid-dairy cows?
Well, I think so. I remember I got to the point where...
That might be.
I got to the point where I was able to grab the lambs, you know, what are they, 40-pounders or something like that, a little bit less when you flip them over and you give them the pills and stuff like that and things. And
okay.
I remember I was able to finally flip them over a couple years, but...
I was trying to remember when I actually got out of them. I got out of them after... I got done with the milking. The reason I must have got out of them is because I wasn't around during lambing because I was working.
I think we tried it a couple years where you're trying to do everything.
Yeah.
So the reason we're talking a little bit more about sheep now, like Dad mentioned, the lambing season. In the lambing season, for a lot of those individuals that are raising sheep, probably January, February, but predominantly February, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, Dad, jump in whenever you want.
It all depends on how you want, if you want them ready to go in pasture right away when the grass comes up or what, you know. But in February.
People that really want to get a market animal ready to be shipped off for market sooner in the year perhaps might get started in January. And for my listeners, remember, here we're here in the upper Midwest, Minnesota, North Dakota, and in February, not this year, but most years, you know, we're talking probably get some below zero still in February, you know, at least some pretty good single digits. And so this whole lambing experience, which you'll get into more a little bit later probably, can be quite the undertaking. Anyways, we'll get that at. So, as far as Dad, for you, I kind of want to get an idea of when you started raising sheep and why.
Well, actually, the sheep goes all the way back to South Dakota. My dad's dad raised sheep also. But Dad had milk cows and sheep. And you mentioned the cold. When you're lambing in February, you need to use heat lamps to keep the lambs warm sometimes, right? We actually had a fire in our old barn at Dad's place because of heat lamps. And we lost quite a few sheep that time. But I started raising them and keeping a little flock of my own, even after I think Dad had gotten rid of his main flock. But I started raising 4-H. The first year I raised a lamb 4-H, I got grand champion.
At the county level or state level?
County level.
That's still a pretty good feat. We never did get close, I don't think.
And I ended up selling that ewe to a friend of my brother's, actually, Charlie Schultz. And he raised sheep for a number of years. But anyway, I got a pretty good little Suffolk flock going for a while. But then, you know, it's hard to keep beef, dairy, sheep, and hogs all on one little farm. You know, you don't have spots to keep them where you want them and stuff like that. But I think we ended up getting rid of the sheep at Dad's probably about the time I was 13 or 14, too.
Okay. Grandpa had a bigger flock, and then...
He had about 100 of them at one point.
Started letting you take over a little bit as you got a little older, maybe, and...
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and my brother likes to tell a story. This isn't on sheep, but he's... When we were in 4-H, Dad would let us have an animal, a beef animal, and then we could keep it if we wanted, or sell it. My brother would always take a steer, and I'd take a heifer. My brother would get the income that year from that steer, but I was building up a cow herd and having more calves of my own. So I was building wealth where Bernie was just taking the cash. Brought that up a couple times recently. He accused me of being smarter than him or something, I think it was.
The brother he speaks of is Brother Bernie in the Hunting with Bernie episode. Go back and take a listen to that. One of the more popular episodes, it seems like. Dad still got the highest amount of listeners in the episode number one with
The Man, the Myth, the Legend.
The Man, the Beast, the Legend, or The Man, the Myth, the Legend. Yeah, that episode.
So. Yeah, it's been out longer.
True. It was just when I was getting started, too, so it's probably a little raw. But you started raising sheep with Grandpa. Actually, you're, in a sense, a third-generation sheep herder, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it's kind of neat to think about.
But anyway, yeah, then when I had my own farm with the dairy cattle, I started with some sheep again there, too, and I had up to 100, like you said. And I learned how to shear them myself, which was kind of fun.
Those of you who aren't very familiar with sheep, you have sheep as a source of wool or as a source of lamb chops, right? So Dad, he kind of had utilized both facets of it, which you typically do with sheep, right?
Yeah, almost most of the time. We actually had, our breeding had pretty good wool. Different breeds have different quality of wool. I mean, your Suffolk won't have near as nice a wool as like a Rambouillet, or Columbia, I think, has better wool than Suffolk too, if I'm not mistaken. And then they all have their drawbacks. Suffolks are nice, clean head on them. They don't have a lot of wool on their head, so you can work with them a little easier and shear them a little faster. They have nice sides to them. They grow fast. There's some of the other breeds that are a little smaller, maybe a little more calm or something. But
what did Grandpa start out with in terms of breeds?
He had mostly Columbias, I believe.
Okay, and then you had?
I had Suffolks when I was at Dad's. I bred mostly Polypay. So they were a ewe that would have a higher incidence of twins and triplets.
Oh.
So you'd end up with more lambs. Which doesn't help if you aren't there to take care of them. The lambs end up getting cold and dying.
I always thought you had the Dorsets.
No, they weren't Dorsets.
Huh.
They were mixes with three different breeds. Finn and a couple other ones. I can't remember exactly what they were. But there were some Finnish sheep. You get quads out of them quite often. But they didn't grow well.
That's interesting. Yeah, so as far as going back to the meat and wool thing, you know, and we'll kind of get into the whole process, I guess, eventually, but I don't know where exactly to start. But someone who's maybe thinking about raising sheep got to think about these things in terms of, well, usually you have a lamb, you know, you wean it from the mother, and, you know, you make it a wether, making it like a steer where it's no longer has its boy parts. And then you just ship those off, even with ewes can be shipped off the market, and you usually just find a local place to, where do you go to find or sell that sheep?
I sold in South St. Paul, way down at the cities.
Huh, I don't know that. I thought it went to just like the local auction place and someone picked them up. And
not usually, no. It was a better market down in South St. Paul for the sheep.
I was over at a work conference here the other weekend, and they had lamb chops, or like a lamb rib almost. Like the rib was still attached, and then it had
rack of lamb.
Yeah, kind of, like a rack of lamb, I guess, where it had the rib attached, and then had a loin or something attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
For lambs and stuff, I'm not usually like huge, because you usually can have like a woolly type of aftertaste sometimes. But it was really well done. It was really tasty.
If they do lamb well, it's pretty good meat.
Yeah, I was impressed. So then you got the meat portion of it, and then the wool. Like, you can shear them yourself, but what are you going to do with it?
Well, when I sheared it myself, I would just, you know, there was a local guy who did a lot of shearing, and he sold it to a warehouse. So I just sold to him, and he paid me for it, and he took it to the warehouse.
There's probably less market now for wool, sheep's wool, than there was back then, I imagine.
I haven't asked lately how the wool market's doing. I talked to him the other day, but I'm thinking about getting in a couple more sheep now.
Right, because you're talking how hogs can kind of be expensive to raise with the amount of feed they eat, and well, sheep kind of just put on pasture most of the summer, right?
Mm-hmm. And so, it could clean up the orchard.
Yeah, it's totally the plan. We're going to tease around that a little bit. You've all heard about our orchard and our endeavor with that, and Dad's going to try to avoid the lawn mowing and kind of do a little bit more of a sheep maintenance on the grass, but also maybe chew off a little bit of the buds in the bottom of the main trunk that's coming up to the vines, the grapes, and things like that. You can check out our little YouTube video I just did on my brother David on pruning grapes. That would kind of refer to what we're talking about in terms of how to prune and what stuff we want removed. The sheep could actually potentially reach and eat. So, yeah, it's kind of a neat idea, I think.
Might take a short sheep.
Might take a short breed, because otherwise they probably might get up there and eat some leaves. But we're going to give it a try on a couple rows and keep a close eye on it, and if they start eating too much, then we'll know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mentioned our largest herd number back when I was a kiddo was about 100. 100 ewes. And so you have ewes and rams and lambs, right? You got the ewes, the females, rams, the males, and your lambs are your little ones. What was the most amount of rams that we had per, like, what's the ram per ewe ratio?
We never had more than about 3, I don't think. Yeah.
I think we had 3 rams for that 100, I think.
Yeah. You need about 3 bulls for 100 beef cows, too.
It's kind of funny. The one year we did have 3, we had one little short, stout one that had some, you know, good little horns on it. And then we had a taller one. And then we had, like, a big, fat, chubby one. I don't know. There's 3 really distinct-looking rams, I remember.
It's kind of funny. I can spend a lot on rams, if I remember right.
Oh, sheep. So we talked about how they usually eat grass in the summertime. But sheep, I guess, regular fencing works, right? We don't need to have anything special, or do you need to put in some different type of fencing?
Regular fencing normally doesn't work.
So normally our fencing line is like a 4-wired system on a T-post. How would you do sheep differently?
Woven wire or 2 or 3 strands electric.
4x4, like woven wire.
Yeah, the regular woven wire. That's why some of our fences have woven wire on them still.
Yeah, I remember when we started to start removing the woven wire on some fences, we just replaced them, and not super fun.
Nope.
But that might be another topic for another day, too.
Yeah, fencing. There we go.
Yeah. Many hours spent doing that, right? In a sense, we're going to kind of start playing the cycle here a little bit and talk about the cycle of things. So now it's summertime. You've already shipped off your lamb crop for the year. And so, you know, you're bringing all your ewes back into the barns. At what point did you put your rams in with the sheep, or in with the ewes?
Well, if you wanted to have February lambing, you put them in September, late August, September.
So then they have, a 5-month gestation period. Got the rams in there, and now it's starting to get cold. You know, bring them into the barn, leave them close to the barn in a close pasture. What are we feeding them after the grass dies?
You usually want to have some elf hay that has a little bit of felt in it, and maybe a little bit of grain. They don't need much grain, not if they're full-grown ewes.
Yeah, if I remember right, we didn't really do much grain unless...
I think the grain was mainly at lambing.
Yeah, the grain, yeah. We fed like one pail. It wasn't much. They get like a couple, you know, probably, I don't know how much pounds it'd be per ewe per day or anything like that, but...
Well, then we had 100, I'd probably feed them 4 pails, so it'd be about a pound few.
Yeah, so we've had them some grain. The cool part about the grain, oftentimes, was that Dad would grow the corn, and then he'd had what I consider an old-fashioned picker, you know, a corn picker that he'd run through and it'd pull the cobs off the corn, and then later on, we'd have to rent a grinder from a local co-op and put it through the grinder and everything, and then we mixed in some supplement to it, right? I don't know exactly what we mixed in, but maybe you can talk about that.
That I don't remember. Probably some mineral. Yeah, I'm thinking more for the beef. We did do that for the beef.
But we usually didn't change up the recipe too much. We usually use the same food supply for the sheep as we did the beef in our little grain bin there.
Yeah.
Interesting tidbit. Maybe I'll have to get Grandpa back on the line to talk about it, but corn picker, our Grandpa lost a couple fingers, actually. Corn picker, right?
Well, all 4 of them.
Well, yeah, I guess his pinky's only half there. But, yeah, the story goes, from what I hear, is that he was trying to... All the equipment was still running, and too much corn got caught up in there and plugged it up, and... No? Is that not how it goes?
Well, not quite. From what I gather, it may have plugged up a little bit or something, but he was reaching in there just to knock this one little cob out down the rollers. It was just sitting there and spinning on the rollers, so just one little husk was caught, you know? And with gloves on, that glove got caught by the roller, and that's using up to his palm of his hand in no time. Well, immediately.
Wow. Yeah.
Lucky it only went up to his palm.
So as long as I've met Grandpa, he's only had, basically the one and a half fingers on the one side. How old were you when that happened?
I was in college.
Oh, you're in college already. Okay.
That happened shortly before we got married.
Yeah, farming is not always a safe business, you know, falling asleep behind tractors, or you had somebody in the local town who ended up having a bale, I think, roll on top of him once, if I remember right. Definitely some precautions to take when you're farming. It's not an easy task. Not always the safest task. But going back to sheep here. So we got them all in the barn, feeding them hay, sometimes a little bit of grain. I think the grain is usually when we're trying to feed out the wethers for market, right towards the end of market, right before market time.
Yeah.
So what do we do from there?
Shortly before lambing, you usually shear them. Because those ewes, they'll go out in the 2 feet of snow. They don't care when they got wool on them. They don't get cold. So you get the wool off them, so they stay indoors for lambing. Otherwise, you got lambs out in the snowbank. That, and then there's no wool in the way of the lamb finding the udder to drink.
Does it also aid you in kind of seeing how far along some of the ewes are?
Yeah, that too. You see the other better to see how close they are to lambing and stuff.
Some of us listeners here are probably thinking, why in the world did you shear the sheep in the
winter?
Yeah.
Almost everybody does.
Yeah, so that's pretty common practice, yeah. And then, describe the lambing season. What does it entail on a daily basis? You know, you mentioned the heat lamp already, but go ahead and go into some of that and kind of like our setup there with the lean and everything.
We'd have the ewes all in one area, and then we'd have just some pens set up with portable pens mainly, set up for putting the ewes in when they have their lambs. You keep them in there for a day or two because you want to make sure the lamb's drinking.
You keep them separate from all the other lambs, so they don't get stepped on or trampled. And
well, and so the lamb takes to the ewe.
Taking to the ewe, you mean that like it starts suckling and...
And knowing who mama is. Because otherwise, if they're out with the rest of the sheep, there'll be 3-4 ewes going after that lamb. Anybody that's close to lambing will be trying to clean that lamb off and claim it. That's something you have fun with sometimes. You say if a ewe has 3 or 4 lambs, and another ewe has 1, you're trying to figure out who belongs to what.
Yeah.
It can get interesting.
I remember you playing that game a little bit, and like any animal, sometimes they're not a very good producer. Say, I remember you having like a quad or 4 lambs for a ewe, and it doesn't look like she has very good udder, and maybe a ewe next to it only had 1. And
yeah.
She maybe would take one and bring it over to the one that had 1 to spread out some of the demand for milk and stuff.
Your mother just brought me a note to remind me to tell you that we did have some that had quince.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you had any that had 5.
Yeah, I actually had a couple of live quince.
Wow. Pretty good.
Then you have bottle lambs.
Yeah, I don't remember ever having 5 that I recall.
There was only a couple times.
I remember a 4, but towards the end, I feel like we were lucky to get 3s when we started adding a little bit of that self-hook in there.
Yeah, self-hooks usually only have 1 or 2.
What's the most common? Is it most commonly just to have twins?
That's what you're shooting for. You're shooting for twins. If you have 4, you're going to have to take 1 off generally. You almost never leave more than 3 on them. So, and bottle lambs, they're kind of fun, but they're a pain in the butt, too.
Yeah, why don't you just kind of process there? What do you mean by a bottle lamb? I mean, you're obviously feeding it from a bottle, but what are you feeding it?
Lamb milk replacer is usually pretty expensive. That's just the first part. It's expensive. If you have a milk cow, you can feed them cow's milk. They won't grow as well as on the milk replacer or to use milk, but it works. You can get them on grain sooner and make up the difference there, probably.
Have you ever milked a different ewe to bottle feed a lamb?
I've done that when they're just newborns.
Because I remember you doing that a little bit. Just try to get them to eat when they're...
Yeah, when they're newborns, sometimes you want to do that. Just to get them going. If the lamb doesn't get something to drink within the first, well, I say 4 hours, you get problems. So...
You kind of force feed it a little bit and hopefully you'll get that idea of what it entails to...
They're usually pretty good about drinking when you stick a nipple on in their mouth.
The biggest problem you got is when the ewe has large teats, Can't seem to get a hold of it.
Yes, that can be a problem.
So what are some of the problems that you can face while lambing? You talked about having too many or too little lambs, lambs dying, getting trampled on by others perhaps, or there's definitely been some times where they end up sitting on one, getting caught in the hay feeder and not knowing that and tossing a bale on them or something. Oops, I think I did that once, but...
Yeah. The worst one is when they push out the uterus. And then sometimes they have this prolapse before they lamb. Kind of rectum's going inside out. That can be a problem. Because then you got to push it in, sew them up and stuff, and be a pain. You definitely want to get rid of ewes to do that.
They usually ship those off.
Yeah. If they survive.
Yeah, what is it, 25% survival, probably, something like that?
It depends how quickly you catch it. They'll try and push it out again. It can be a mess.
Yeah. I feel like that one Sufflick that we had for the longest time, like our last Sufflick, she had that happen, but she managed to keep it around for a while, because it was our last one, and she had that problem, and it lasted a while. Got lucky. She only usually had like one lamb, too, though, so.
Yeah. You get attached to certain sheep sometimes, and you shouldn't keep them when you shouldn't.
Yeah, well, I know. I showed the lambs that you a couple years in a row, I think.
Yeah.
You have all the lambs happily, you know, with their mothers and everything, and you put out them to greener pastures, but there's a process there. I remember it was like a day process where it's like, hey, tonight we are deworming the flock, basically, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so talk about that a little bit.
The worms, parasites, don't affect the ewes all that much, but if you have a high parasite load in a lamb, they won't grow well. So you got to deworm the whole flock to get rid of the worms, the source of worms from the ewes, too. And so, yeah, you got to catch the sheep and either sit them on their butt and use a bolus gun to give them a worming bolus. You can do them standing up, too, but sometimes they're better if you just sit them down.
Yeah, I think I remember the problematic ones. Those are the ones we had to flip that I was talking about. I grew up just old enough to be able to flip the ewes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you almost had to give them a little pinch in their cheeks to get their mouth open a little bit. And
yeah.
Basically, for that device that Dad mentioned, it's kind of like a syringe. You just put a big, I think it was a big yellow tablet, if I remember right.
Sometimes yellow, sometimes pink.
Or white or whatever. Yeah, but it's probably half the size of your pinky, I think. It's pretty large.
Yeah, it's a good-sized pill.
Yeah, it's a hard swallow for a human being anyways, I think. But then you basically syringe it in there and pushes it in. And sometimes you got to close their mouth a little bit to make sure they swallowed it.
Once in a while, you have one sit there and nip, 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 nip. Then up to mouth it goes.
Yeah. Well, what's the source of the worms? Just from the inside the feed they eat?
Mainly the pasture. Ewes will defecate with worm eggs in the manure, and they'll hatch and get in the grass and then eat. If you rotate pastures and stuff like that, you can kind of manage your worm load that way without so much worming. But if they're always on the same pasture, chewing it down to where they're getting down there, where they're going to get all the worms, then you got to worm them off.
It's another like a loading question, or like the capacity for, say, if you had an acre, how many sheep can you put on an acre?
Well, you usually figure you can feed 10 ewes on the same area to do one cow. So if the cow takes 3 or 4 acres, you can do three ewes on an acre. Yeah.
It wouldn't like overgraze it too much if you kept them on that one piece, basically.
If you kept them on the one piece the whole time, yeah, they probably would.
That's the one thing that's different about cows and sheep, is that cows seem to be a little bit more picky in terms of what they eat. So they'll nibble some grass sections down to like, 4 inches or something like that. But sheep, they'll nibble it all the way down to the nothing.
Cows will too sometimes.
Yeah, true. If you have to weigh too many cows per area, but sometimes that can be used as a mechanism to control certain weedy plants. You know, if you have some thistles or something like that, the sheep might be more inclined to eat the flowers off or something like that. Or if you have some woody brush, maybe the sheep might nibble on that more than the cows would. So there's definitely benefits to having sheep versus cows in certain instances. They say that they both kind of eat a different profile of grass in the pasture. That's why you can kind of put them together a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, grazing them together is actually beneficial. I've never really tried it, though.
I thought we had the cows and the sheep together a little bit.
Well, milk cows, but that's different.
The sheep herd was never in with the beef cows.
No. I was thinking if I do decide to get into raising some to put in that pasture in the orchard, I might raise enough to put with beef cattle too. Get about 15 ewes or something.
And once you're tired, you can take more time with them, right?
Yeah. And I'm sure the grandkids will love playing with bottle lambs.
Oh yeah, Sophie was visiting one of Nora's aunts and uncles, and the whole bottle lamb. She preferred the bottle pigs. Because they were kind of still just screamy and squirky, squealy or whatever. And lambs, they were to the point where they were like pushing pretty hard on that bottle. So she's kind of like freaked out because they're jumping on her a little bit.
Lambs do love their milk.
Yeah, they sure do. Yep. The other little thing as far as diseases that I remember, or at least things we had to do with our sheep on a yearly basis, was we were also putting scrapies tags on them, I think, when we were doing that day of working the sheep.
Yeah.
That might have been the shot that you had to provide to give them, right?
I think the scrapies tag was just to identify them. If when you ship them, they get, they're found to have scrapies, they can then trace back to you.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah, so scrapies is like a neurological disease that can basically, I think once they get it, which is more common in the younger sheep and lambs and things, but adults can get it, but once they do get it, it's like a 4 to 6 month, and then they're like done. One of those kind of looking at and researching here before we talk. Neurological disease, probably kind of similar to your mad cow or your chronic wasting, but in sheep. That's what I kind of gathered from it, perhaps. And scrapies tags are just basically to, hey, if you tried selling something and it died weird, or maybe they probably test it prior to processing for meat and things, and if it came back positive, they'd know where to trace you back to.
Yeah.
I know the 4-H animals always had to have their scrapies tags, and sometimes we'd lose them and have to find another, you know, torn out or whatever, but yeah, that's always a process too. But yeah, then basically after we get done that day in the springtime, then they're back on the pasture, feeding them out again, and the cycle repeats. So yeah, so that's basically what Dad and I did, or what Dad did, raising sheep in a nutshell, the nitty gritty, quick and easy. Didn't really get into too many details, but that's pretty much an overview of raising sheep and kind of what it entails. I don't know, Dad, do you have any other comments that open to whatever you have to say?
Well, I always enjoy raising the sheep, so you know it's something I wouldn't mind doing a little more of once I retire here from the Postal Service. But we're going to try those sheep in the orchard here this year, and if it works out well, I may consider starting a small flock up, and we'll run them with the cows. If they're with the cows and used to being with the cows, they should stick near them. We shouldn't have to worry about predators, I think, too. That's what I'm hoping.
That's kind of an interesting point, is that when you do have sheep, sometimes coyotes and things like that can kind of go in and nab off a couple lambs here and there. And Dad raising sheep there, we always had a llama. His name was Charlie, and he didn't spit very often, but occasion, he did.
You guys picked on him enough to make him spit?
I think he spit at Liz once.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's usually pretty good.
But actually, what the funniest thing is, that llama, is that llama and the horse that we have, Darling at the time, they always got a little bit of feed left over from the milk cow, because those three always kind of went the same pasture. Or you fed the sheep a little bit or something. But anyways, and Darling would go walk over to the corn feed, you know, little trough there, and Charlie would beat her to it, and he'd spit in it. And then she wouldn't want to eat it. And so Charlie got all the corn to himself. Smart llama. He just died, about 3-4 years ago?
Yeah, might be a little more than that now.
So let's say it's 5.
5 about.
That puts me 29. I mean, probably got him when I was 9 years old. He probably lived to be like 20 years old.
Yeah, that's about their lifespan, about 20 years.
Yeah, llamas are a pretty good companion to a sheep that keep away the coyotes, and then also you can have like sheep dogs.
Well, I don't know if you ever noticed, but when the neighbor's dog would be out at their place, he'd perk up and he'd look over there and he'd be stomping his feet. He knew what he was supposed to be doing.
See, I always thought he was kind of worthless, but...
Oh, you paid attention to the dogs in the neighborhood.
Oh, that's a good point, though, yeah. We'll probably follow up here and kind of let the audience know, you know, how that goes with putting sheep in the orchard. I've heard of other orchardists putting in grazing pigs.
Yeah.
I've also heard of other orchardists not putting in grazing pigs, but putting in actual pigs, which I find surprising, but somehow they've made it work. I think there's a pretty large orchard over by the cities that did that, and I thought they would for sure tear up the roots and kind of dig and all this and that, but maybe he rotated them around pretty quickly where they didn't do that. I'm not sure, but I feel like that'd be pretty risky. Yeah, stay tuned for that. I don't know, Dad, any other comments?
No, that about takes care of it. It's my bedtime darn near.
Yep. So, yeah, thank you everybody for listening. Stay tuned on the YouTube channel, and we'll probably get some videos on gopher trapping here before too long, now that the ground's thawed out. And follow me on Instagram at homegrownfam and on YouTube, and then my email is at homegrownfam@gmail.com. If you have any other specific questions, I always think it'd be kind of fun to do like a Q&A with some of these things, so you're a regular follower and have multiple questions, or we gather a bunch of questions from some followers, we'd probably go in a multi-generational panel and answer some of those. It'd be kind of fun. I don't know if Grandpa would be up for it, but... Anyways, thank you, everybody.
Bye.